Attention all groups. This is Admiral Akbar with your Armada advice. Don't forget that you set a ship's speed dial when it is deployed. I find it helpful to put the speed dial on a ship's base when I'm getting out my components for a battle, as it will likely fall off when I'm moving the ship to the deployment zone and remind me. And remember, setting it to speed zero is not an option. Assume attack coordinates, and may the Force be with you.
At last we will deal with these rebel scum. You may fire when ready.
Welcome to the third episode of Fire When Ready, a Star Wars Armada podcast. I'm Jim, your host. Brace yourselves, this is going to be a long one. Now normally this would be where I like to put in a current events section about Armada, but man, Force Awakens. It's so good. Go see it. Take your kids, especially your daughters and your nieces. This movie is going to be the kind of geek-creating, life-altering movie for today's young ladies that the original trilogy was for young men of my generation. One of the most touching comments I've read was from a father who said, "I was holding my son's hand when..."
Sir, that's a spoiler.
Those of you who have seen it know what I'm talking about. Go see it and feel good about loving Star Wars again. For today's ship, we're switching over to the Imperial side, and I'm going to talk to you about the Victory-class Star Destroyer. The VSD is basically the complete opposite of the CR-90. It's slow, doesn't respond well, turns like a brick, but is tough as nails and dishes out serious firepower. It sits pretty with 10 shields and 10 hit points, a meaty front arc, respectable sides, and a fairly weak rear arc. In my opinion, the real strength of the VSD is not the firepower, mighty though it is, but in its ability to soak up incoming fire. Playing to that resilience with engineering orders keeps it on the table and forces your opponent to keep using resources on it, while the amount of dice the VSD throws out essentially takes care of any offensive needs by itself. There are basically two roles that the Victory can fulfill, and can do either or both of them fairly well with no upgrades, but becomes a real nightmare at one of them when you do. The first is as a carrier to launch fighters from. It can be boosted up to activating 5 squadrons at a time with tokens and upgrades, and the firepower is still enough to one-shot smaller ships. The other role is an anti-ship dynamo, where you are all about at least crippling, if not destroying, one ship a turn in combat. With a base 3 squadron, you can still use fighter support if you need to. Again, the VSD is a dual-role ship regardless of how you kit it out. The more expensive version is the VSD-2. It sports a brutal 3 red and 3 blue dice out of its front arc, 2 reds and a blue from the sides, and 2 reds from the rear. It also has access to the ion cannon upgrades as opposed to the ordnance upgrade on the 1. This was my Victory of choice in Wave 1, and I'll detail why later when discussing the VSD-1. The best upgrades for the 2 depend on which role you're going for. If you want it to be a squadron platform, there's 4 upgrades you'll want to look at. Expanded hangars, boosted comms, wing commander, and flight controllers. Boosted hangars versus boosted comms is really a matter of what list you're taking. I think comms gives you a lot more flexibility in fighter deployment, given what a slug the VSD is. But if you're running a lot of squadrons and you have a firm grasp on deployment and controlling the battlefield, hangars may be your choice. Wing Commander is a new card I am loving, as having it gives me flexibility I didn't have before. I used to try to anticipate when my squadrons would need orders to engage, dogfight, or bomb, and when they'd be stuck in and I could afford an engineering order to keep the VSD around. But now I can just use nav or engineering orders the whole time and not worry about losing out on using my squadrons. Of course, if you're using Tarkin as your commander, you can save yourself 3 points and just take a liaison. Flight controllers are great for clearing out enemy squadrons in a dogfight, but your list may not need it depending on the squadrons you take. If you're bringing TIE bombers in your list, you'll probably want to add in Admiral Shirano and give it the Corruptor title to keep your bombers from being locked down by engagements. I personally don't bring bombers that often, as I feel that the Imperials have plenty of ship-killing power just in their ships, but I'll still bring interceptors or TIEs to engage with Rebel squads on bombing runs. When it comes to upgrades on a ship with this many slots, I think it's best to just break it down by upgrade type. For officers, one card to always look at is the support officer. That card has saved my bacon on high command ships fairly often. For carrier builds, I always look at a wing commander for improved flexibility instead of the support officer. On shootier builds, I'd look at an intel officer or a veteran captain. Intel for obvious reasons, and the veteran is a cheap upgrade for extra effect when you need it. I think Director Isard's an okay upgrade that will come into her own when 400 points is the norm, as she's cheap and you'll see more big ships for either factions. I don't think the various liaisons are a good choice, unless you're running Tarkin as your commander and have tokens to burn. I almost always end up using my tokens anyway. The various double-pointed versions of liaisons are also not worth it, with the exception of Wing Commander I already discussed. You could get use out of the navigation and engineering versions, but I don't think you'll get 6 points of use, and a Concentrate Fire Order on tap isn't giving you very much proportionately with the number of dice a VSD throws. Captain Nita might be a fun one to surprise swap, a redirect for, an evade, but fun is all he'd be. The weapon team slot has only one option per build that's worth it for me. The gunnery team for ship killers to maximize that big front arc, and the aforementioned flight controllers for carriers. Offensive retrofits almost come up empty for ship killers because the only non-anti-fighter upgrade is to shoot down squadrons better, and with only one blue die to fire, well, this is a waste of points. With the addition of tractor beams, though, a VSD finally has a viable upgrade in this slot. For carriers, it's either the tractors or expanded hangar bays. The ion cannon slot has two good options, the pricey NK7s and the cheaper SW7s. The VSD2 throws a lot of blue dice, which gives a solid chance of a crit effect, just north of 50% to be technical. So you're more likely than not to strip a defense token away. The SW7s are half the cost for a great passive effect, but I'd hate to waste that crit chance, so I prefer the NK7 if I can afford it. In Wave 1, I didn't like the overload pulse on a VSD, as it was supposed to be the heavy hit that should follow an overload pulse hit, instead of its delivery system. But in Wave 2, you could have it set up for an Imperial Star Destroyer, so depending on your list, it may work, especially in combo with the ISD's Avenger title. The ion cannon batteries give you an extra hit against shields for 5 points, and that might come in useful some of the time, but frankly, you're probably going to collapse a shield without that 1 point, and would rather use the crit for the face-up card. Leading shots is essentially a 4-point insurance policy against the rare, totally horrible roll, so only take it if you have points to burn. Turbo lasers. Here, I think there's only 3 viable options. The enhanced armaments gives you an extra red die, which is the least reliable die, on the sides for a whopping 10 points, and you can get way better mileage out of that 10 points on a VSD. The XX9s might seem good on paper, and they are cheap, but the other 3 are so much better it's not even funny. H9 lasers are the answer to Rebel ships at long to medium range, allowing you to negate their evade token and get those hits in, and against other ships you can take away their brace or redirects to keep your damage maximally focused. That's a good upgrade, but it's still a little pricey, which is why the other 2 I consider to be auto-includes, the XI-7 and the heavy turbo laser turrets. Both are relatively cheap, and they each negate an advantage of an opposing ship. Heavy turbo lasers make your opponent choose between bracing and doing anything else, and I think it shines on a ship that doesn't have a high chance of negating the brace order, either through upgrades or accuracies. The VSD2 throws nothing but blue and red dice, though, so I'd look at XI-7s. They focus your damage where you want it to go, and if you go up against a lot of assault frigates or Mon Cal ships, it's a great pick to neutralize their large shield pools. Either choice has advantages and disadvantages from target to target, though. For example, MC-30s don't care about heavy turbo lasers, and Raiders couldn't care less about XI-7s, so I don't think you can go terribly wrong with either. For titles, there's only one choice for each build. Dominator for shooters is the only really viable one for me, and even then, it's situational, as I think the real advantage of the VSD over other ships is its resilience, and stripping off shields voluntarily cuts into that. In Wave 1, I ran a VSD build that used Wolf Ularin on it to keep cycling an engineering token through to replace that shield, and it worked really well to get extra punch without sacrificing too much. As mentioned above, Corruptor is a good choice for bomber-using carrier builds. Warlord might look tempting, but on a typical roll for a VSD, you're not going to be hurting for more damage. Which leads us to a viable combo, H9 and Warlord. With these two, you gain a ton of flexibility for how your dice results come out. Ideally, you're able to use it on a red die that rolls a single hit, turning it into an accuracy, and then, because some of your blue dice were accuracies and you don't need another, you change the red die again into a double hit result, increasing your damage by one. It also guarantees a hit with anti-squadron fire, turning any non-hit result into a hit by the same process. For all that, though, it is 16 points for that flexibility, which is a bit expensive. The VSD-2 is a ship that you want to get into firing range quickly, and angle such that your big front arc will hold ships inside it for as long as possible, while you reduce speed to 1 and just blast away. Putting some tractor beams on it will help with this. I like to stockpile a nav and engineering token on the approach, then run nothing but engineering orders once I'm stuck in to keep it on the table as long as possible. I might throw in a nav order if I'm facing things that are going to run absolute rings around me, but mostly I want it to survive to throw out more dice each turn and deny my opponent its sizable victory points. If it's a squadron enhancer build, I'll run more squadron commands instead and try to bank a token for keeping shields and speed changes, but you lose a fair amount of points if you don't keep repairing and your VSD goes down, which is why I love the flexibility that a Wing Commander upgrade gives me. I know I've said it a lot, but it just keeps bearing repeating. Wing Commanders are great. The VSD-1 is the slightly cheaper option that trades out the medium-range hitting power of the 2's blue dice for the close-range onslaught of black dice. It also replaces ion cannons with ordnance weapons, but other than that, it's identical to the 2. I was not a fan of the VSD-1 pre-Wave 2. Before Wave 1 was released and we just had the core set, I remember talking to friends about what a nightmare the raw firepower of the VSD-1 was going to be. Once we got in some games, though, we found that the VSD-1 is slow and easily outmaneuvered, just like the VSD-2, except the VSD-2 could hit back harder and more consistently with the increased optimal range. Often, I found my VSD-1s only got off red dice shots. Plus, the Gladiator fills in the heavy close-range damage roll better than the VSD-1 ever can. Now with Wave 2, I see the VSD-1 making a resurgence in my list as a cheap platform for either squadrons or a tractor beam that can anchor a flank or just sit back and hold an objective as needed. As far as upgrades go, this is mostly the same as VSD-2 upgrades for the various builds you can make, but for the loss of the ion cannons. The exceptions to this are the weapons team and turbo laser slots. Gunnery team is far less useful on this build, as once a ship is close enough to get black dice thrown at it, it's probably going to obscure any other ship you can fire on out of that arc. Sensor team might come in handy, as only your red dice have accuracy facings, and then only on 1 out of 8 sides, so trading one red die for an accuracy is a fine choice when you're throwing blacks for damage. Ordnance experts get that black die reroll, but as I noted, I find getting a VSD to black die range can be difficult. They're only 4 points, though, and if your battle plan supports it, the experts may be a viable choice for your VSD-1. XI-7s and heavy turbo lasers are still very good, and I'd take the heavies here due to having way fewer potential accuracy dice, but H9s come into their own here to give a better chance to have that accuracy to complement your black crit hits. In Ordnance, you have two okay options, and two good ones. Expanded Launchers gets you two more black dice in your front arc for 13 points, and I think this is a waste. If you've got a front arc shot, you're already throwing plenty of damage output, and two more is likely just overkill. Rapid Reload makes your side arcs two red and two black, which helps with the nearly inevitable outmaneuvering, the downside being that since they're such close range, you're probably going to end up ramming whatever you're trying to double arc with it, which may or may not be a good thing. You could also not always get much use out of them due to never getting into black range, so I'd leave them at home. Assault concussion missiles were the star of Wave 1 for black dice, and they're still very good. Assault proton torpedoes are great. They're cheap, and they don't care at all about shields, letting the sheer amount of damage you're going to throw purely on dice worry about that part. Couple either of those with ordnance experts for a real close-up killer and increase your chance of that crucial crit result. Again, though, the VSD is a slow-moving, slow-turning pig of a ship, so really think about whether any of these will be worth it. For titles, Dominator is still the ruler of the roost here, as you're even more likely to be at medium or closer range, and blue dice for more accuracy are always good. Warlord is an even worse buy here, as you'll almost never want to turn accuracies into more hits. Corruptor is still good if you want to run bomber support. The real problem I see with the VSD-1 as a ship killer is its agility versus its optimal range. Sure, you can give it ordnance experts and proton torpedoes and turn it loose, but with minimal maneuverability and only speed 2, it'll probably only get 1 to 2 rounds of firing before it's left in the dust, wasting those upgrade points. Throw on some turbo laser upgrades, and you might only get to use them with 3 red dice, and again, probably not going to make those points back. Personally, I think it'll shine if you keep it as minimal as possible. Just add on tractor beams, and maybe ordnance experts or a support officer if you feel like it. If you're running it as a carrier, though, by all means, load it up. VSD-1s are a ship you're going to want to run at speed 2 longer than a VSD-2 if you're running it as a ship killer. And you're also likely to need more nav commands to get those sharper turns in so that faster ships stay near your front arc. If it's a fighter supporter, it runs just the same as a VSD-2 with that build. Don't forget to pepper liberally with engineering commands, or, to beat a dead horse, add a wing commander! After the break, I'll lock S-foils in attack position and talk about the X-Wing.
When Jim wants to play Armada, he heads down to Round the Table in Lynnwood, Washington. They have board games, a friendly and helpful staff, food, ice cream, and a rotating selection of beer and ciders, so you can loosen up and fly casual. Thursdays are X-Wing and Armada night, so come on down for a glass and a game and say hello. Find out more at www.rttgamepub.com.
And we're back. For this week's squadron selection, we're going over to the Rebellion and taking a look at the X-Wing, the iconic ship of the Rebel fleet. It's a multi-role fighter, able to threaten enemy ships with the bomber keyword, and it's the best dogfighter the Rebellion has. Rebel fighters tend to be decent all-rounders, with a slight edge in one role, but X-Wings are the all-roundiest. The X-Wing sports a 4 blue dice anti-squadron battery, which, coupled with its high hit points and escort keyword, makes it an ideal squadron to use against enemy squads. It'll engage them, hold them in place, and keep them off your bombers while destroying lower HP opponents, sometimes in a single volley. Only the YT-2400 matches the X-Wing in a dogfight for the Rebels. If your opponent doesn't have any squadrons, or you've blasted all of them into space dust, the X-Wing can make an attack run against ships, but it's not the best at it. It uses 1 red die for anti-ship, which is the worst attack die, and its bombing run ability is only salvaged by having the bomber keyword. Without that, it would be the worst of the Rebel fighters at attacking ships. With it, it comes about equal with an A-Wing, tying for worst instead. This doesn't mean that they're awful at attacking ships, but let's just say there was a reason that Y-Wings were the preferred fighter to make the Death Star trench run, and the X-Wings were the backup. The real downsides to the X-Wing are its speed and its cost. With speed 3, it's not going to be intercepting enemy squads a quarter of the board away like TIE interceptors and A-Wings. It's going to be catching them just before they get into range of your ships. Likewise, it's going to struggle to keep hitting ships unless it's constantly getting a bump in front or receiving squadron commands. At 13 points, it's also fairly pricey. You're paying for the versatility of being a dogfighter slash bomber slash escort, even if it isn't very good at one of those things. You're not going to be able to field them en masse like you would a TIE fighter or an A-Wing, but I think they're worth the extra. When running X-Wings in your list, here's some things to keep in mind. First of all, don't send them in alone or unsupported. One-on-one, they'll likely demolish any other fighter, but you don't run into lone TIEs very often. X-Wings need a wingman, both to increase their firepower output to street sweep squadrons for their bombers, and to divvy up the incoming damage from escort. Keep in mind that they have to take the damage first, and only putting one in your list guarantees their destruction. Give them some B or A-Wing support at the very least, so that some extra damage can be thrown out while the X tanks for them. I like to run them in pairs, threes at the most. If you really want to increase standard X-Wing's survivability, though, couple them with Jan Ors to take advantage of her brace tokens while they tank. Add in her intel ability to keep your bomber group from being slowed down or launching torpedoes, and I'd consider her an auto-include in any list where I was using the X-Wings in a pure escort role. Be mindful of overextending with them. At speed 3, they're probably only going to be able to attack one squadron group or ship before the game ends if the battle is spread out. The X-Wing is a medium-range fighter. Keep them close to the action, or acknowledge that they only have one mission, and they won't be making it back in time to be effective later. Finally, if you're running a carrier ship, really think about putting flight controllers on it. X-Wings become five-dice beasts with it, crushing all opposition and laying waste to bomber formations. So, how about those aces? Well, first let's look at the flying farm boy, Luke Skywalker. At 20 points, Luke is tied with Kian Farlander for the most expensive Wave 1 Rebel Ace. But is he worth it? Well, that's going to depend on your list. Luke is a standard X-Wing when it comes to dogfighting, so he's not going to be any extra help there. Get him in on a ship, though, and dropping that black bomber die that ignores shields softens up a target nicely, or can finish one off with a luckily timed hit crit result. Yes, if Luke gets killed off by fighters before he gets into bombing range, he's an expensive trophy for your opponent, but I find he easily makes his points back if you can clear a path for him. Just remember that unlike other X-Wings, Luke shouldn't be mixing it up in a dogfight if you can help it. Let the other squads take that duty for him. To help deliver him into torpedo range, I like to run him in lists with hyperspace assault as an objective, so I can get him into range at the right moment. Running him with Yavaris and giving him two bombing runs in a turn is flat out amazing, and others have used him well with Gallant Haven to ensure those 20 points are going to stick around on the table due to his two brace defenses. Luke also pairs up well with Jan Ors, giving him extra braces to spend and allowing him to fire torpedoes past enemy squadrons as above. However, you can save a few points and just take a Hawk 290 for the intel if you have some other squadrons you can use to screen for him. The other X-Wing ace is Wedge Antilles. 1 point cheaper than Luke, Wedge is still really pricey, but is more balanced on paper. Luke's all about a bombing run, and while Wedge drops a black die as well, he still has to deal with shields. His big special power is that he can roll two more blue dice when attacking a squadron that's already activated. That power is great in theory, but to really get use out of it, Wedge needs some help. Keep in mind that unless you're facing an opponent that has just used a squadron command, using a squad command on Wedge guarantees he's going before any enemy fighter is activated. Therefore, you either really need to be careful with when to use your squad commands, and if you can weather your opponent's alpha strike, or just not use them on Wedge at all to not squander his special power. There's two ways to help Wedge out and use that power to its full potential. The first is that he has good synergy with the Y-Wing ace, Dutch Vander. If Dutch hits a target and damages it, it causes that target to become activated, so obviously you've set that target up for Wedge to come in. There's a few problems with this, though. Dutch is fairly expensive on his own, and while he's better than standard-wise at dogfighting with his three blue dice, that's not a guarantee of damage. It's about 88% likely, to be technical. Couple that with the fact that Wedge's ideal target to be throwing six blues at will be an enemy ace, so you have to get Dutch through defense tokens as well, and it's even less likely. You can increase that with the aforementioned flight controllers to get Dutch up to four dice, and Wedge up to a whopping seven, but that's a lot of points for one combo. The second, and my preferred option at this point, is to use Adar Talon. This way, you can still have your Alpha Strike with a Squadron Command, deactivate Wedge, and then use him again in the Squadron phase. Just make sure that either your opponent has initiative, or you have two other fighters yet to activate, so that some enemy fighters will be activated before Wedge does. As an aside, Adar really works well with the Yavaris-Luke combo I mentioned, letting the young Jedi drop three shots that ignore shields. Just make sure Luke's turned off his targeting computer before you roll that die. Blanks are just heartbreaking on Luke's bomber rolls. Well, I think that's all I have for this episode. Next time, we're going to talk about the Nebulon B and the TIE bomber, so I'll see you back here for that. Your thoughts, Admiral?
It's a wrap!
Fire when ready. A Star Wars Armada podcast can be found at www.firewhenreadypodcast.com. Talk to me online on Twitter as @ArmadaJim or by email at jim@firewhenreadypodcast.com. All celebrity voices impersonated, all rights to the spoken content of this podcast are reserved.